Right. Welcome back. My name's Mary Hamilton, and I'm going to be presenting the next session on behalf of myself and Carol. We're going to be talking about space, time, and boundaries. And we're going to start off with an activity that involves these pictures that you have in your packs. We've got 9 different pictures, and you'll just have one of them. If you have a look at the picture you've got, we've got some questions for you about that picture. Okay, the main one is, look at the picture you have and think about whether this space that's represented in the picture is conducive to writing. And if so, what sort of writing? We'd then like you to talk to the people around you about the pictures they have and how the spaces represented in their pictures compare to the one you've got. And then you could go on to think about, where do you write? And would you work in this kind of space that's represented? Would you work in other kinds of spaces? And if so, when and how? I'm going to give you just 10 minutes between you to have a look at the pictures and discuss those questions. And then we'll take a little bit of feedback before we go into my presentation.
I'm going to go to the next slide.
And reflections from looking at these pictures. The idea was really to just get you thinking about space and the spaces that you and others choose to work in. So I don't know if anyone's got particular comments or issues that came up in your discussion. These are the 9 pictures that people had. We've got contrasting library spaces. We have writing on the train in a coffee shop. A lecture theatre, a lab, different offices, and a space in the woods. Yeah.
One thing we discussed draws on Rowena Murray, so the snacking and feasting of writing. So doing a short burst, you can do short bursts in quite a few of those places.
Yes.
But the long stretch, the feast of several hours, may be more limited, depending on the person. We did find quite a lot of variety among us about what we could put up with.
Yes. I think that's one of the things that we've found, is that people tend to have strong preferences, but they're very various. So that's something to take account of, yes.
But one of the things we also discussed was that sometimes the place is choosing your place is a form of procrastination. I can't write unless this, I can't write unless that. Whereas when you're actually really attached to your writing, you can pretty much write anywhere, up to a point.
Very interesting.
You know, but you look out, but it is a form of can't do this until everything's
in place. Yeah. And maybe helping you settle. Yeah. Yes.
I would say the importance of silence. But then there's also some people who work really well if people are talking in the background.
Yeah.
And it can really be contingent on. And if you have to share an office with several people and you've got one person who prefers to work with music and someone like myself is ready to strangle that person, it can cause tension even within that space.
Yes.
This goes back to what you were just saying. Sometimes when you're in the zone, when you're not in the zone, the tip-tapping of someone else's keyboard drives you nuts. And when you're in the zone, you can be sat in the middle of an airport and churning out hundreds and hundreds of actually words that are going to make that you think these are, they do make it to the final cut. So it's not even always constant to the same person.
No, I've missed trains because I've started to work on the station platform. Yeah. It's been cold, announcements. But suddenly, you think, oh, Jesus, I've missed the train.
Yeah. Yes. Someone at the back.
We were talking a little bit about that. I mean, one of our pictures was the student lecture theatre and those horrible flip desks. And it just made me think about how the physical space itself may actually subvert what's supposed to be the legitimate practice. So if you've got not enough space to be writing your form or you're taking notes or whatever, you may end up on your phone.
Yes.
Not because you're bored, but just because the physical space is not conducive.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, and that's one thing that's happened as student numbers have increased, is that those kinds of things that you might think of as extra space within lecture theatres have been reduced. So those writing spaces for students alongside them. Yeah. Well, that's an interesting variety of reactions, and I know there was a lot more going on there in your conversation. So what we want to do is, I'm just reminding you here of the pressures that we have identified that academics are facing. Many of them are conflicting or kind of crowding in on their writing lives. And so we wanted to tell you what our research participants tell us about how they manage those pressures. And one of the key ways is in constructing boundaries across spaces and times for different kinds of writing. So that's what we're going to look at in this section, is how people manage the spaces that are available, the ones that they prefer, the way that they can write at different times and in different places. Okay, academia is one of those kinds of workplaces where at least some of the activities of employees take place outside of the workplace, elsewhere. And probably with digital technologies, that kind of dispersion of activities is on the increase. So perhaps it's not surprising that people told us that their writing work takes place in a wide range of different spaces. And although most people are provided with an office, the office is only one of those spaces in which people write, and it's not the most preferred one for most of the people that we interviewed. I have to say that, as you've already observed, what counts as an office that is available to people is very, very different for different academics. So some people do still have the luxury of their own office. Some people share an office with another person. Some share an office with, someone was telling me today, 40 other people. So, and particularly if you have an administrative role, I think it's much more likely that you will be in one of those offices where there are other people constantly around you. The other pressure that we found is that, I think in all three of the universities that we have carried out our research in, there were refurbishment and rebuilding works going on. We didn't choose them for that, and the reasons why they were being rebuilt was different in each case. But there was a lot of disruption and a kind of temporary office space being negotiated by people. And we've talked a little bit about some of the issues around digital technologies, which are both positive and negative in giving people the flexibility of working. It's quite interesting to think about space, to start off with, from an institutional point of view. And all the institutions we worked in had master plans. What this tells you is that universities are designed spaces. And as academics, we maybe experience the result of those designs, but we don't think too hard about the planning that goes into them, the estates, offices, the personnel involved in that design, and a great deal of universities' budgets that are put into it as well. So it's really interesting to think of it from that point of view, I think. The use of space in universities has changed significantly with that change that Karen mentioned earlier, the change from an elite to a mass system, catering for more students, bigger lecture theatres, bigger teaching spaces and so on, and the need for more academics as well. One of the things that seems to have happened is the separation of academics' working spaces, personal offices, from spaces for teaching, with kind of bigger lectures rather than the kind of tutorial system that perhaps at least some people were fortunate to have in earlier times. Increased pressure on the working space that is available, smaller offices, movement between offices as refurbishment and new courses, new changes happen within the university, and this kind of constant rebuilding that people have to work within. I think in all the three cases we looked at, people weren't sent home because there was a hole being dug next to their office, but people work through that, which is quite an interesting expectation. Big shift from the library as a central workspace to online access to library resources. Although there are disciplinary differences in that, and those in the audience perhaps who are historians will relate to the historians that we interviewed who told us that they still prefer and indeed need to go to archives, to go to physical libraries. But many of us have shifted to online repositories, and that makes a difference in the way that we use the space within the institution. The investment in the modernisation of the university estate has been aimed a lot towards students and student demands, student needs for social space, for different kinds of study space, and perhaps less consideration given to academics' working lives. And we think that perhaps that's one reason why some of the expectations around writing and how academics should be working doesn't match with the physical spaces that are made available to them. And of course, the efficient use of space is at a premium now, and that involves audits by the estate's management, and that's one of the pressures that heads of department have to deal with. I just put these two up as two different institutional spaces that people have to deal with. Again, this is a disciplinary issue often, that the immediate spaces available for people to write are vary considerably, how extensive those spaces are, how modern they are, how well equipped. And different disciplines in the same institution often have very different kinds of accommodation. So let's look at academics' considerations about space. Many find the institutional space provided inappropriate for some types of work. And for example, this quote, any serious writing for research, this kind of feast of writing, if you like, I would basically do at home in my study. The writing which has more to do with administration, I would tend to do in the office. So the workplace office tends to be for those kinds of writing that involve engagement with others, colleagues and students, whereas this serious, sustained, perhaps more creative writing is done at home. Temporary disrupted spaces were not conducive to concentrated writing for extended periods without interruption, perhaps not surprising. And however, what alternatives people had to their office space on campus depended a lot on their personal lives and demands at home. So some people don't have the luxury of a home office or uninterrupted space or time in their home life. So that makes a big difference. Okay. So in terms of academics' choices about space, people express strong preferences about the setup of their writing spaces, and they tend to set up their own spaces with the right kinds of resources around them. So they make active choices about where they want to work. So here's an example of someone kind of trying to settle into a new place. I sat in my office, I was facing that way, and then when I moved here, I was facing the other way, and it took me 3 months before I could write. I felt like I was in the wrong direction, and that's massively disruptive. I thought maybe I'll never be able to write here again, but I did settle into it. And she needs view, she needs a horizon to look at when she's writing. So, I mean, maybe there's lots of ways you could interpret this set of preferences, but a very strong expression of that. In terms of strategies that people use, different spaces for different kinds of writing, you know, that kind of feeling what's appropriate leads to people searching out different kinds of spaces. So different offices, different kinds of desks, perhaps more than one desk in the same office to do different things, different computers that people use. I think you were talking about that earlier, different digital devices for different kinds of tasks. So very interesting comments there. One person said, I have one desk which is very much like my workspace, and it's for looking at spreadsheets and stuff like that. Then I have another desk which is much nicer, and it's got more tactile things around it. It's a more restful space, and that's for if and when I ever do some research writing. That's the luxury, isn't it, she says. Although in terms of the managerial pressures, it's not the luxury, really. Another important aspect of people's spatial strategies is the mobility. Academics are actually now expected to be mobile, aren't they? Disciplinary cultures and individual career objectives, as well as institutional policies, mean that you need to go regularly to conferences, work with colleagues on grants, and this comes with both opportunities and costs in terms of writing. 2 or 3 hours on a train can be a really precious resource for focused uninterrupted writing, and some people did say that. So cafes as well, public transport. I don't use the office for writing, it's too disruptive and despairing. I write either in libraries or cafes. And someone else who says trains are fantastic, 2 or 3 hours you can really achieve something. Okay, so one last thing about spatial strategies is, we've already touched on this really, the controlling the aesthetics and the sensory experiences of where you work, and that does seem to have an effect on people's ability to write. Music, we've talked about already, views out of the window, tactile keyboards and so on. So this person likes to be outside, or likes to be in contact with the outside when they're writing. He likes his Mac. It's a lovely machine to work with. I find the physicality of the place I'm working very important. I work faster and quicker and more efficiently. I wonder how many people in the room feel the same way about that. Okay, so as you can see from that previous quote, Charles is also managing time with space, and I think that's although I feel like I'm very interested in space and Karen is interested in time. Actually, space and time are completely interlinked in the accounts people give us. Day-to-day work time is important, annual rhythms, and different time scales as well, as we've already talked about a little bit in terms of the REF. So in terms of day-to-day work time, people talk to us about the fragmentation of work, and email is a major culprit in that. Alex in history said, email, of course, this spectre that looms over modern academic life. I try to turn it off. I don't have notifications on. I find in some ways it's the temptation of, oh, well, I have a quick break and check my email, which I'm trying to discipline myself out of, but it's easier said than done. So here's this kind of procrastination again, but also the email is not only a facilitator of things, but a kind of interrupter of the writing process. But there are also physical interruptions to work and writing on campus, some of which are to do with the kind of accelerated workload that people have and the multiple demands that are being made of them. And Will says, you think you've got 2 hours, I'm going to get something done, and then it just takes one knock on the door to interrupt it. And it was very interesting, Ibra is going to go on to talk about our observations of academics, and these interruptions are constant, you know, whether it's students or colleagues coming into offices when people are on campus. So annual rhythms. Some of the changes we've been talking about have changed long-established academic writing annual rhythms, and again, this did depend a bit on discipline, but it also depends on other things. Diane in marketing says there's no longer a block where you can say I'm doing writing. We used to have the summer, but things like overseas partners, it massively intrudes on everything. So the fact that you're working now the whole year long, there is not a pause where you can change your rhythm and change the way that you write. In terms of disjunctures in timescales, people have to manage their writing and writing demands at different timescales. Lengthy timescales of research writing, they're not the same as teaching and administration, which are often much more immediate. They demand a response straight away. The upside of that is also that they're then done and they're out of the way and you move on to the next task, whereas research writing has a much longer kind of rhythm to it. Not just for historians, I think, but for many of us in different ways. The institutional timescales don't necessarily fit with the individual timescales either. And this was a head of department in history saying, writing is a slow process. Things like the rest don't necessarily factor in that writing is a form of thinking. As you write, you process and you reflect and you think, and arguably we need to speed up all that because we now have these deadlines and these targets that need to speed you up. You just kind of short circuit somewhere along the line the thinking and the reflection process. Mm-hmm. So a real sense of kind of stress and disjunction here. Okay, so what strategies do people use? As I've said, these are linked to spatial strategies. And one of the biggest things that we could see across the accounts that people give us is that people are constructing boundaries around times for different kinds of writing. Particular times of day for particular types of work. Time blocking and making compartments between one kind of task and another. Or extending the time and space of writing work. And there's a very strong desire and need for some kind of autonomy in constructing those kinds of workable strategies that people talk to us about. So if we look at time blocking and compartmentalising, this is the kind of thing people were telling us. By trying to compartmentalise the admin stuff into my job and the teaching stuff, apart from the research, I'm trying to clear some headspace, if you will, just sitting down. okay, I'm not going to worry about email today. I'm not going to worry about students and teaching materials and so on. Let's just keep pounding out this chapter and see where we get by the end of the day. So really trying to block things off and keep that uninterrupted feast of writing going, at least if it's just for a day. We also touched on this, I think, in the discussion, this idea of extending the time and space of work. This is a strategy some people use, not always successfully, but actually work spreading out into all times of the day and night and across all the different spaces that people are moving and working within. I will check my emails many times a day. I will answer emails at 11 in the evening. In summer, I wake up early or so, 5:30 in the morning. It does mean that work and non-work are very much interlinked. I don't know if that's entirely a good thing. It gives you more control, but it does mean you try and you tend to spend more time, I think. So you could argue about whether that is really a strategy of control or not. Okay, so just to conclude, to manage the pressures on space and time in academic writing, these seem to be the important things. First of all, the ability to create and manage boundaries, being able to do those things. Having some kind of autonomy and choice in maintaining boundaries and around the strategies that you prefer. Thinking through the nature of interruptions and what those might mean to your writing work. So both the physical interruptions of, you know, colleagues and students and the other kinds of work that might be intruding on writing time, and digital interruptions, and email is the one that people talk about a lot. We think also explicit discussion about expectations around these kinds of working rhythms is a really important need and implication, if you like, of the accounts people have been giving us. And that's both in terms of working time, how people manage emails, how other people manage the emails that they send you, so what the expectations are around that. And the idea that there could be some kind of mentoring process around these expectations that helps those discussions to take place. So I think these are issues not only then for individual academics, but also for administrative and managerial staff, and involve reflecting on the working culture of a department or an institution. So I'm going to leave it there, and I think we've got a few minutes to discuss. Karen, I don't know if you want to add anything, or you just...
I'm happy to respond to discussion.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Did you ask people, because now there are lots of apps and programs that you can get, and I use them, to close down certain websites and certain programs.